This is the April 11 edition of Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Greg Johnson. He's with TotalGrainMarketing.com in Champaign, Illinois. Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef AgriMarketing. He's in Morton, Illinois. And Mike Zuzulo joins us from GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online at willag.org, willag.org. Let's get a list of items that we should discuss for the day. We probably can dispense with the WASDE report, maybe CONAB as well, because I'll ask you questions about that. Other than those, Greg Johnson, what's on your mind?
Well, kind of related to the CONAB, and it's not CONAB, but it's Argentina, the private, there's some rumors that the corn crop in Argentina may not be quite as big due to leafhoppers, a relative of the grasshopper. And so depending on which estimate you listen to, that could be a couple hundred million bushels. And, you know, we may be grasping for straws, but that might be something potentially friendly, supportive slash bullish in the corn market. And that might be something to at least get the market's attention. So I think that's worthwhile discussing.
Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef AgriMarketing, anything on your list?
Well, I think these outside markets, the dollar in particular, which relates to the interest rate environment right now, is something that's affecting our grain markets. Might be stealing a little bit of Mike's thunder here, and it might be on his short list as well. But I think the weather situation, not only in Russia and Ukraine, but also the southern plains, I think should be front and center. I think it's something the wheat market's keeping an eye on as well.
And Mike Zuzulo, GlobalComResearch.com.
I think just dovetailing with those other two fine gentlemen, the soybeans have been kind of the leader to the downside with the supply-demand fundamentals and with, you know, more trade tensions between the United States and China. Wondering if there was any kind of change to that mindset after the WASDE numbers came out today.
Well, let's start with those WASDE numbers. Why don't you go through them and some of the changes? There weren't very many, in fact. Can you begin, Mike, with the global figures for me?
Yeah, I think that's where the biggest changes were in terms of face value changes. The world wheat stocks to use ratios did drop again. We got to a fresh new 10-year low. You know, we're right up against within a percentage point or so of the lows back in 2014 and 2013 time period, Todd. And we did see the total demand break through 800 million metric tons. And so stocks did drop a little bit on the world side of the equation. Wheat was very close to the average trade guess. But I think that the corn and beans being above the average trade guess, at least as far as the Reuters estimates, roughly 2 million tons higher in the corn and roughly 500,000 to 600,000 tons higher in the soybeans, probably because the USDA did not cut the South American production. And that's really where the top of the envelope issues were, I think, in the trade was the supply demand going to come in lower in South America, to kind of pick up on what Greg said about the smaller private estimates and now official estimates in both countries for corn and beans. Was the USDA going to play ball with that or keep saying the big crop gets bigger? They split it between the middle. They took down the Argentine corn crop by 1 million tons and left everything else alone. So I think that in and of itself left a bitter taste in everybody's mouth as we went into the second half of trade.
Would you agree with that, Chip Nellinger?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, just kind of calculating it up here, you have essentially a 550 million bushel difference between the CONAB number for their corn production and the USDA number. And I think that is throwing people a little bit for a loop, like Mike said, about 300 and some million, I think, on the beans between CONAB and the USDA. So people are scratching their head saying, what's the reality here? You know, we're trading the U.S. market. It's driven by the USDA numbers. And I think the market's kind of defaulting to those numbers. And they seem like relative to what's coming out of the Southern Hemisphere as far as private and governmental estimates, the USDA is like way out in left field on it. And so it leaves a little bit of question in the market, and no market likes uncertainty. And think the path of least resistance, at least for today, was lower in these markets.
On that note, Greg Johnson, USDA earlier this year readjusted last year's soybean crop out of Brazil higher, and clearly that may have been the case. Do you suppose they'll stick to their guns for much longer this year? And is that part of the reason they haven't adjusted that soybean crop size?
Yeah, I think the government has, USDA has been lowering the Brazilian crop by 1 million metric tons each month here for the last couple of months until this month where they kept it unchanged. So that kind of tells me that they think that their number is right. Supposedly, they believe that there's more acres planted, and based on the exports, they feel like they can justify this higher number. And if you remember, last year, the same thing happened, and they never did come together. I think USDA ended up five and a half million metric tons higher than the CONAB number, the final CONAB number. So we keep thinking these numbers will eventually have to come together, but they didn't last year, and maybe they won't have to come together again this year. And so then, you know, is CONAB out in left field, or is USDA out in way out in right field? As Chip put it perfectly, you know, the market does not like uncertainty, and there certainly is uncertainty when it comes to which number do you believe in the soybeans. And so, you know, the market just, you know, until they feel more confident in one number or the other, just feels like they just don't want to take a position to the long side, you know, until there's some clarification on which number they want to choose to trade.
It feels, Mike, that's unlikely to come, at least very early in the new marketing year for soybeans. What are your expectations for how this might play out?
My expectation is that USDA may be on a track that they want to wait for the 24-25 numbers next month, and that's when they'll start cutting back in the expectations of the crop. I look, and I'm sure the other guys do too. I mean, you look at the stress indexes for drought, you look at the VIRS, you look at all the satellite imagery and everything you can get from a standpoint of, you know, my South American guy I talk to every other week, he just gave me a fresh crop report last week, and the numbers are pointing down, not up. And I think that's where, if I had to guess, the USDA is too high, and they'll probably come in May and start to adjust. But at that point, they'll be able to pad the sensitivity of the prices because we'll have fresh 24-25 numbers. And following that through, if that's correct, with today's 8% increase in U.S. ending stocks for soybeans, you know, up to 340 million bushels, that's why I feel like the beans have a kind of a weighted look to them, as far as I think the corn number could go down more because of strong exports, as long as HPAI doesn't get in our hair as far as demand from that avian influenza. And as I said before about the world wheat and what Chip was talking about, the southern plains, it just seems like the grains have a little bit more going for them in terms of both the supply and the demand side at this point.
I'd like to close out South America, or at least a portion of South America, and turn to you, Greg Johnson. What do we know about the leafhopper situation, the disease that it has spread in the Argentine corn crop? The Rosario Exchange clearly believes this to be an issue.
Yes, the Rosario Exchange put out a number this morning of 50.5 million metric tons of corn, down from their estimate last month of 57. So that's a 6.5 million metric ton. That's over 200 million bushels for those of us that don't speak metric very well. So a 200 million bushel drop hopefully will translate to maybe, maybe not 200 million, but 100 million more export demand for the U.S. And so we need all the demand we can get. Demand's running around 14.6 here in the U.S. If we could get that up to 14.8, 14.9, that certainly would go a long way towards helping reduce some of the supply of the corn crop. But, you know, again, will USDA follow along, or will they drag their heels and reluctantly lower that number? Or is that Rosario number overly optimistic or overly pessimistic, I guess I should say? So just came out, so a lot of time yet before we'll know the real number. But there's some potential there possibly lowering the Argentine crop substantially, and hopefully that translates into some U.S. demand.
Now, let's deal with some of the other things that you all are wanting to be asked about. Chip Nellinger, I'm interested to know what you see in the outside markets at this point, particularly, and what's impacting corn, soybeans, and wheat.
Yeah, the last couple of rounds of inflation reports, Todd, have come in hotter than expected, both the CPI and the PPI. We saw the dollar index earlier this week put a real sharp rally in. To me, it's a double-edged sword. I'm not so sure, exactly what that means for the grain markets. There's different segments of commodities and assets. The energy markets, you've got crude oil north of $85. You've got all-time highs in the gold market. So there is some money flowing into different sectors of commodities because of the inflation, kind of reignition of inflation. But now with this stronger dollar, I think that's something that directly impacts beans, maybe negatively. I think that's been, supportive to the Brazilian farmer. Even though our bean prices have moved lower, I think the currency move for them has been a net positive. So I think it's a real mixed bag out there. The hope is that it's going to stimulate the funds to get out of their short positions and kind of want to be long grains again. But in the very short run here, I think it's also negative. So I think it's something we need to watch. The Federal Reserve has said that they want to lower interest rates up to 3 times in 2024. That looks less and less realistic. So, I think it remains to be seen, but inflation certainly looks like it's popping its head back up. And will the funds in the long run want to hold this big net short position in the grain markets if we are going into the next stage of increasing inflation is a real question mark out there.
Mike Suslow, I know you watch this on the macroeconomic side. What are your feelings?
Well, this is one of those markets where, as Chip was talking about, you have a real reason to feel that maybe the grain markets have some real change of trend ahead of them, because the gold corn ratio right now, going back to 1974, is the second highest it's ever been on a weekly basis. And so is that telegraphing something? And certainly the retail investor in China, the central banks like China Central Bank, the investor that has been buying gold has been doing it, I think, for a lack of confidence, and also because they believe that there's a lot more inflation out there than the government numbers suggest. They've been right, because these numbers this past week showed it as far as the CPI numbers. And so that higher for longer mindset has been proven to be accurate. And I think it really just goes back to what Chip was talking about. Does this keep the dollar stronger for longer because we're higher inflation, higher interest rates for longer? Or is there a lack of confidence building, and all of the commodities will kind of join in then in terms of adding risk premium? So I think it's a lot like the 70s and 80s and maybe even the late 60s, based upon what I've gone back and looked at, Todd, as far as what could be in the works here. And I think we're going to know maybe before the end of planting what these outside forces are going to probably do.
Greg Johnson, I want to bring you back to the WASDE report released on Thursday morning, and just to the season's average cash price for wheat and corn. It dropped by a nickel each. For soybeans, by a dime. This is for the crop that farmers own now and harvested last fall or summer, depending on which crop it might be. Does that jive with how much grain is in the system, particularly for corn at this point? And do you expect that number to continue to fall?
With wheat, I think the number makes perfect sense. They took it from $7.15 down to $7.10 a bushel, down a nickel. And people were asking me, $7 wheat, don't they know wheat prices are a dollar lower than that? And they said, well, you have to remember, this is based on what actually got marketed. So most 90% of the wheat has already been sold. So that number is not going to change very much on the wheat. So fortunately, people sold wheat last summer at relatively high prices. And so that's why that average farm price in wheat is as high as it is. With corn and beans, not quite the same story. There's probably 50% of the corn still left to sell. So if the price would drop low enough and the farmers sell at those prices, then that could bring that average price down even lower than 470. We have the next 3 months, which traditionally, seasonally, are better markets for corn, as we have weather uncertainty. And so hopefully farmers will be able to take advantage of that and get some corn sold, and so that we won't have to see that 470 price drop a whole lot more. But the potential certainly is there. As far as soybeans are concerned, probably 70, 75% of the soybeans are sold. Farmers have done a much better job of marketing their soybeans. And so that price probably won't change a whole lot just because the percentage of beans marketed is a lot higher. But it is at $12.55. And, you know, theoretically, if we plant a lot of beans and have a good crop, I guess I could see that price dropping further eventually. But this might be low enough for the time being for the next couple of months.
And then, Mike, now coming back to you, let's, rather than go to corn or soybeans, still deal with wheat for just a bit. Chip had suggested the weather in Russia might be a problem. We've talked about that a couple of times during the closing market report with the meteorologist. It has been really dry there. Still, it's spring, and so there's plenty of time for that crop to respond, though that could be an issue. That also would be problem for Ukraine, and then the southern plains as well seem to be having some issues. What are you seeing in the wheat market?
Yeah, and I think one thing to add to your correct points about Russia is we're also seeing historic record flooding, some cases over 100 years more, 100 year highs as far as flooding in the Urals, and so some of the key winter wheat acres are also potentially going to potentially get drowned out at this point. So I think between the crop conditions surprising me this past week and improving in states like Nebraska and Kansas, and the drought monitor that came out on Thursday afternoon showing less drought in Iowa, even though the 7-day precip in Iowa has been below normal by quite a bit, it's an interesting dynamic that we're carrying right now. I think we're kind of whistling past the graveyard, assuming things are great. I don't think they are great. Producers in Nebraska and Kansas out in my area are telling me that they're halfway done with beans. They're starting corn this weekend, and they just don't like how dry it is. They love planting in it, but they're getting very, very nervous about the drought potential increasing. And so I think that should be reflected first and foremost in the wheat, Todd. I think that the other thing that happened this week that really needs to be watched is the fact that Russia has physically gone after the energy infrastructure and also the grain infrastructure again near Odessa. One of the big ports, my understanding, is shut down for at least a couple days now because of the destruction and the damage done. So I think we've got more reasons to put premium into the market than less, unless we see a spike high in the dollar or unless the avian influenza comes in and really shakes the funds in terms of thinking the demand is going to be really hurt because of poultry and maybe culling of dairy if the aphis moves in that direction. I'm not predicting that, but we just don't know what's going to happen with HPAI and once it now has been found in South Dakota, unfortunately, in a dairy herd as of Thursday afternoon.
So I will stay with you. What do we know about that particular finding? And again, still we're waiting for USDA to do something at this point, I suppose.
Yeah, I'm no scientist, but what I can say as an analyst and the other guys, I'd love to hear what they have to say too, weighing in on the past. When you have these types of, it's like the South America, it's like the uncertainty in the market has to deal with. Right now, the market is taking the path of least resistance, saying it's going to hit our consumption, it's going to hit our demand. Let's take premium out of the market. And so the cattle lows in April feeders, the Friday lows from last week were tested on Thursday. We bounced off those. The April fat cattle lows were not tested from last Friday. We got within about 20 cents. But those are my numbers to not close below, or we could open this thing up another leg because of the funds. And this is a funds versus fundamentals type market, I think. But for me personally, I don't know why we're not mandatorily testing dairy around the country, making it free and finding out where it is and starting to kind of lock it down. Because at the end of the day, 10 to 15% of our dairy slaughter goes into our beef production. And we don't want consumers to think that they can catch HPAI and avian flu from raw meat. And you may think, well, why are you saying that? Well, it's because the press over in Europe is already starting to talk about it. So we got to put this fire out before it even starts, if you ask me.
Chip Nellinger, anything to follow up there? And then I really want to hear what you have to say about weather in Russia, Ukraine, and the southern plains as well.
Yeah, no, I think that was really good what Mike said. And I really do think that it's already kind of hindering the corn market a little bit. You know, we had that what should have been a wildly bullish acreage number there at the end of March. You come in after the long weekend over Easter, and there was some news over that weekend and early that Monday, and the corn market should have followed through by all rights to the upside, and it just fell apart. And so I really think, you know, I'm not saying it's to the extent of a mad cow, but there's an awful lot of people that trade the grains and trade the livestock and cattle markets that remember mad cow very vividly. And when there's that uncertainty that we talked about earlier, it is just get me out. I don't know what it means to meat demand, protein demand. I think it helped the hog market out. I think it's hurt the corn market, obviously hurt the cattle market. And it's a real issue and a real concern I have going forward. I think Mike, you know, hit this, you know, world wheat situation. I don't think it's necessarily an immediate issue on the wheat, but like Mike said, you know, you've had some, you know, record high summer like temperatures in some of those main growing areas of Russia and even Ukraine. And they got a little bit of rain in the forecast, it looks like, but, you know, probably still a little bit below average. And I don't think it's a case where we, you know, wave the flag and say the crop's dead. But if they don't start getting some better moisture there and better moisture in Kansas and Oklahoma, I think within the next 4 or 5 weeks, the wheat market really takes notice and crop conditions should deteriorate. And I think that could be something that also, you know, helps spur some short covering. If wheat were to rally and do that, I think that helps the corn market to a certain extent too. So I think there's a lot of, you know, moving gears in here, as we've talked about, the weather being one of them. You could be in for some real choppy, volatile, you know, trade in the next 6 or 8 weeks that doesn't make a lot of sense and, you know, gets people kind of turned around backwards on this thing.
One outside influence, Greg, that I'd like you to take up as well is war across the planet. We've mentioned Ukraine and Russia's targeting of Odessa. However, Ukraine targeted the infrastructure within Russia, particularly their ability to produce and crack crude oil. And then you have the Middle East, where they're remains a war in Israel with Hamas. However, they have involved Iran directly. Iran says they will respond at some point. What kinds of concerns do we have as it's related to the marketplace?
Well, we've seen oil prices trade in the mid to upper 80s. There's some talk that it could get into the 90s and maybe even touch 100 if a war actually does break out or a skirmish breaks out. And that you in the good old days, we would think higher oil prices means higher ethanol prices, which means higher corn prices. The problem this time around is ethanol is kind of a function of mileage driven. It's more of a demand thing than a price thing. So in other words, oil prices can go higher due to a lack of output, and ethanol prices don't necessarily need to follow along, you know, because we're only blending 10%. Ethanol for every gallon of gasoline we're using. So if crude oil prices go up because of a war, that doesn't necessarily translate into more demand for ethanol. So, you know, I think we need to be mindful of that. It certainly is higher, you know, higher gold prices, higher crude oil prices, but I'm not sure it translates into higher corn prices necessarily.
And finally, from each of you, and Mike, I'll start with you before we get our final word here, with marketing of old crop corn, new crop, as well for corn and soybeans. What should farmers have at the top of their mind?
I think the top of my mind would be you're still profitable in the soybeans for both old crop and new crop at this, time, Todd, whereas the corn and wheat, you just really can't get there at this stage. And so I think that's what you start with. And again, the supply demand fundamentals, I think, rule when it comes to, you know, making that next move as far as what do I sell first. And just to give you an idea, if we lost, one of the guys was talking about the loss of South American production potentially in corn. If we lost 10 million metric tons off the ending stocks globally, that'd take us down to a 308 ending stocks for corn. That'd be the lowest in 5+ years. So we've been flatlining corn ending stocks for 4 or 5 years. It wouldn't take much I should say, in stocks to use ratios. It wouldn't take much to change that dynamic very, very quickly.
Greg Johnson, your thoughts on marketing?
Mike hit it right on the head with soybeans. They're still profitable. I encourage farmers to go through their cost of productions. And if you can make money, I know it's not going to be as much as we've made the previous 3 years, but those years are behind us and we just have to, readjust. And if we can make some money in beans, we need to sell some beans. And corn, even though old crop corn prices are low, there's still very good carry in the market. New crop corn prices have been hanging around 470. If we could get the seasonal 20-cent rally up to 480, 490, I know everybody wants something with a 5 in front of it, and I'm not sure if 480, 490 futures, which would be like 450, 460 cash, I don't know if that makes money, but I will remind people the market doesn't care if farmers make money or not. If they think there's a glut, a surplus, they're going to run the price down to where somebody will either store it or use it. So maybe this is a year where we just try to break even on corn, make a little bit of money on beans, and kind of go from there. We don't want to be double long old crop and new crop corn. So hopefully here in the next 90 days, we'll get an opportunity to take advantage of that.
Yeah, I think a couple things. I think as far as old crop goes, corn and beans both, if you're holding on to some unpriced inventory right now, you got a couple weeks left here, but once the planters start rolling, assuming we have, normal weather, it's hard for the market to go up. So you're at a point where you just about have to make a decision. Do I want to hold this grain all the way into summer and bet on some sort of volatility with the weather or a hot stretch or, some volatility out there? Or do I cut that loose and maybe look to re-own it on some sort of a paper strategy? I think as far as new crop goes, you got to have a plan, right? I think there's going to be a lot of volatility ahead of us. Some of it won't make sense because it'll come from these outside markets. It won't always be fundamentally driven and make logical sense. I think if you don't have a plan, you're going to get caught up in that and make horrible decisions. So I think now's the time, even though it's busy with spring field work and planning, to make that plan, use the volatility to try to get yourself in a position, both physical inventory and, maybe paper, to be right no matter what happens, right? If you make some sales on a rally and the market breaks, look for some re-ownership that makes the market not matter which way it goes, right? You've got the sales and you've got topside open. So that takes some thought and some effort, but I think it will really pay dividends this year because I think there's still going to be a lot of volatility ahead of us the next few months.
Mike Cicillo, a final word from you today.
Well, as Chip and Greg were talking about, given the record high gold prices and really nice price action in some of these other commodities, my big question coming into this week was either the inflation or the report going to help turn the tide with the funds in their net short positions, and neither apparently are going to do that for us. And so now my mindset, Todd, would be global cash markets really rule the analysis as far as the next 3 weeks. If we've got problems in America, Paranagua, upriver, Argentina should be showing that in corn and beans. If we've got problems in Russia, European wheat markets should start to be showing that relatively quickly. And if we've got issues in Southeast Asia, Malaysia palm oil has been, really having a difficult time as far as the psychology of the market. I think these are the biggest factor which could cause the funds now to cover their shorts in the next 3 weeks, other than some weather market issue here in the States.
Chip Nallinger, your final word?
Yeah, again, I dovetail with what both those guys have said. It really, there's going to be strange moves that don't make a lot of sense. And, back to my previous comment about having a plan, I think it's really important to do that. There's going to be opportunities out there. Also, don't forget about the crop insurance decision we just made about a month ago. That really plays in with your marketing plan. A lot of people bought up on coverage this year. Just keep in mind what that equates to on your guaranteed revenue. You don't want to be making scared sales, at or below where your guarantee is before we even turn a planter wheel out there.
And finally, Greg Johnson from TGM.
There's a couple of, I don't want to say bullish things when it comes to the corn market, but certainly friendly or supportive. Just the seasonality, April, May, June typically is a good time for the markets to rally as there's a lot of uncertainty. Weather, we know it's dry out west. That could still come into play. And we know the funds are short. So all those things give me reason to think that we can rally 20 cents from where we are, maybe 25. But can we rally 50 cents? Are we going to have a five in front of these prices? Probably not. The farmers are holding too much corn. We've got a 2 billion bushel carryout. Even with 90 million acres of corn, if we have a trend line yield, that's a production number of 14.8 billion. That's about what demand is. So we really don't reduce the supply with a normal crop. So bottom line is we need a weather problem somewhere to get the to get some of this glut cleaned up. And then, and you know, that's usually not a good bet. So use small rallies, I think, to take advantage and get your marketing plan, get your marketing bushels more in line with where we are historically, because we're certainly undersold compared to most years at this point.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You may listen to the whole of the program on our website. Just click and play at willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.O-R-G, or subscribe to the Commodity Week podcast in your favorite applications like Apple, Spotify, and you can find it on YouTube now. Check out the Farm Doc Daily YouTube channel at youtube.com/@FarmDoc. Our thanks go to our panelists today, including Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri Marketing, Greg Johnson from TGM Total Grain Marketing, as well as Mike Zuzla, GlobalComResearch.com. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.